story about a woman I want to share with you that experienced prosperity. She was shopping and she found a mink coat that she loved. So she called her husband and she said, "Honey, I have found the most beautiful mink coat. It is on sale and it's just gorgeous. It's only $1,500. You don't care if I get it, do you?" And he says, "Well, if it's what you want, yeah, it's okay. Good." And she says, "Well, and also, I happened on the way here to the store, I happened to stop by the dealership. And you know that BMW that I want? Well, they have it at the dealership, and it is the color, exact color that I was waiting for. So it's only $55,000, and I was thinking I'd like to have that." And he said, "Well, you've been waiting for it. Yeah, I think that's fine." She says, "Well, also, you remember that house that we looked at and we both liked it so much? It's on the market. It's listed at $450,000. And if you think it's something we could use, if you would like it, I can stop by and make an offer on it." And he said, "Well, it sounds good. But go only offer $420 for it to start out with." And she said, "Okay, I'll do it. All right, well, I'll see you tonight." She hangs up and he hangs up and then holds up the phone. He says, "Anybody know whose phone this is?" Very prosperous lady, her husband might have. Well, I wanted to make time each week as we're doing this to share prosperity stories. Has anybody had anything this week where they've just had an abundance of love or money or health or some story you'd like to share? Mary. Yay. Great. Other stories. I have a really good one. You know that I'm selling my house and I have a contract and now it has been inspected and we've agreed to the repairs. So now everything's looking pretty good. One of the things I had to have fixed was, well, the water heater just broke and water all over the floor. I had to have that repaired. Did that. And then the gas man came the next day to check and make sure all the gas was okay and all that. So he noticed that there were quite a few things that would fail an inspection. So he fixed all of it, and there was a good amount, and he, I think, gave me a pretty good price of $600, you know, to fix all of this tubing, and it's all really good. So that the gas company put it on the gas bill. Early this week, I'm sitting, and I do bills every once in a while. I just have everything still in the envelope, so I was opening the envelopes, and I saw the gas bill with that $600. $669 with the other gas, too. And so, okay, we'll figure out a way to do this without dipping into savings. And I was continuing to open envelopes, and I get to the one by my the mortgage company, the house I live in now, because it's been about a year since I bought that house. So I open it up. I thought it was just the regular monthly statement. It turns out it's the escrow statement. I had paid too much into the escrow, so I got a refund check of $682. There you are. You know, God is good all the time. It's wonderful. So, prosperity, abundance, we throw these words around, and often, as we've said before, when we think of prosperity, we often think of just material, monetary things, but Prosperity is more than that. It is an abundance in finances, yes, but health and love, as you had said, just an abundance of all things that are valuable to us in our lives. If I am abundant in my health, well, the way I like to look at it is I have enough and a little more. You know, so with health, I have enough health and vibrancy to do the things that I really want to do, and maybe a little more to have some endurance and some stamina. And if I have love, then I have enough to make me feel satisfied and secure and all of that, and a little more so that I can extend love to those who maybe could use a little bit. If I have enough money and a little bit more, then I have enough to meet my needs and a little more to enjoy or to share. So it's enough and a little more, I think, is my definition of prosperity. We have been talking this whole month about prosperity and basing it on this little book, Edwin Gaines' The Four Spiritual Laws of Prosperity. This is our third week, our third law. The first one was that T word, tithing, but we learned that it's about flow and keeping flow going. So God is our source for everything, and we give back. And so there's a flow, and tithing is an important way to have that happen. Last week we talked about setting goals, and we decided that, or said that it, when we have goals, we have a vision, we know where we're going, and we move in that direction. If we don't have goals, then we're, you know, here, or we're over here, and it may be okay, but how to, you know. Setting goals is a really good idea, and to have that enough and a little more, it's important. Today, Law 3 is about forgiveness. And you might think, forgiveness? Well, what does that have to do with prosperity? Actually, it has a lot to do with prosperity. There's a quote by Edwin that I want to share with you. She says, this is from her book, "If we refuse to forgive, we are clinging to self-defeating feelings such as guilt, shame, blame, hurt, and resentment. And when we do this, we cannot truly feel worthy of having the best God can give us. We cannot and will not accept God's gifts." Does that make sense? Yeah? The way I kind of look at it is if we imagined ourselves to be kind of like just clear vessels, you know, just imagine right now for in terms of spirituality, that we're just sort of light-filled, you know, we just are these clear vessels. When we have one of those emotions, those negative emotions, it's like putting a rock in there. So God's good can come in, but it has to go around that rock. Okay, and then you have another, why, he makes me so mad, another rock. Now God's good has to kind of go between the rocks. So get enough rocks in there, there's just not going to be good that can flow. So that's kind of the way I look at it, is when we have blocked ourselves, then we cannot receive that which we say we want. A couple of days ago, or a few days ago, I guess, I was talking to a friend of mine who wanted to participate in a sweat lodge. Who has done a sweat lodge? Anybody? One. If you don't know what it is, it's a big tent kind of thing and teepee sort of thing, and they fill it with rocks that have been heated very, very hot, and they put them inside there. Of course, it's really, really warm in there, and people sweat. And it's a sacred ceremony, Native American ceremony. It is very sacred. The idea is that it's a very cleansing thing to do. Well, my friend wanted to do it, but he had had a few beers the night before. So the deal is that you can't do that. It is sacred, and they want your body to be clear. They want your body to be clean. It is sacred. So while he was a little aggravated that he couldn't, I kind of get it, you know, because even though you can't see the effects of the alcohol, he wasn't drunk to start with, but it's still in there. It's still finishing its way. Forgiveness, I think, is like that. When we have those negative feelings, it is polluting, if you will, our spiritual experience. So it's important It's very important. Jesus taught forgiveness in a big way. That's where the 70 times 7 comes in, the title of this talk. Jesus came. Edwin has some funny things to say about what she thinks he was here to do, and then he got here and I'm like, whoa, okay, we better go back to the basics, which is love and forgiveness. But clearly, he said that what is the greatest commandment, and the greatest commandment is to love. Love God, love your neighbor, love yourself. And then he also equally taught, or maybe not equally, but very much as important, that we forgive. Remember, there's one scripture passage that talks about, why are you worrying about the speck that's in your neighbor's eye when you have a log in yours? You know, go and take care of your own self first before you worry about someone else's. So we are to keep ourselves clean and clear, our vision clear. One of the disciples talked to Jesus and said, well, Master, how many times am I supposed to forgive? Like seven? You know, what do we do? And Jesus said, not seven, but 70 times seven. So I don't think it's really an actual number. You don't have to keep track. That's 354. You know, it's not like that, but I think it is. It's sort of just a metaphor for just keep forgiving. Anybody ever smoke and quit smoking? Yeah, me. How many times did you quit? Many. I did. Many times. And each time I quit, I wanted to quit. You know, and I tried and it didn't work. And I came back and I tried again. So I think it's like that. It's forgiveness, this 70 times 7. You just keep doing it, because some things aren't very easy to forgive. Some things aren't. I once had I still have it. I have a trunk that was my great-grandfather's. My grandmother gave it to me. And it was very rusty. I think it was made of tin. You know, the metal part was tin and had wood over the top, and has wood over the top. So I thought, I'll refinish this. And I went and had it in the basement. I got some kind of stuff that you use. And I went down there and I started working. I just was working on a little circle. And I worked and I worked and I worked and I worked and I was, you know, sanded and sanded and sanded and sanded. Nothing much happened that night. So then, you know, I came back and I did it several times. And finally, I got through to a spot that was down to the tin, you know, that was down to the metal. And I was thrilled. And I thought, I'll never, you know, it'll take me my whole lifetime to do this. So I had a professional do it. Sometimes forgiveness is like that. Sometimes you don't see much reaction at first. You know, when you first start doing it, sometimes it's a process rather than an event sometimes. She had a funny story about forgiveness. I've told her before, she's Southern and she has all these little ways of speaking. It's just hilarious when if you read it, it's I start laughing out loud. My dogs all look up like, what? But she has a story about her grandmother, and she describes her maternal grandmother as a very, very sweet older lady who used to like to sit in the evening and just watch television. And apparently at the time, Houston, it was Houston area, and Houston had a deal where they were trying to crack down and make arrests for prostitutes, ladies of the street is what she called them. And the grandmother would sit in her rocking chair, and she would watch this, and she would say, "Those hussies, I hope they hang them." Sweet little lady, but they, you know, that would come on, she'd say, "Those hussies, I'd hope they hang them." Went on several nights, and so Edwin talked to her grandmother, and she says, "Have you ever heard of the theory about reincarnation?" And grandmother's, "No." So Edwin said, "Well, you know, that some people think that what we criticize on Earth this time, then when we, if we die, we come back, then that's what we are." The grandmother's eyes got real big, and she the next night, apparently, in front of the TV, another story about prostitutes being arrested, and the grandmother this time said, "Well, bless their hearts." And her other grandmother used to say, there ain't no rocks in my pocket, which another Southern, I just love the Southern story she's got, ain't no rocks in my pocket. And at first I thought, what does that mean? Cast the first stone. You know, who's gonna throw a stone? There are no rocks in my pocket. I'm not going to do that. So in support, it is important to forgive. How much? Until there's nothing left, no trace of any negative feeling inside us. That's how much. Do you ever know anybody who got stuck in their stories? They had something really tragic happened, yes, but they stayed there. You know, they stayed there with it. And so then that becomes their story. And apparently Edwin was one of those people. She says sometimes there's a need to reframe the story. And so I was reading, read on, and she said sometimes it seems like it is so difficult to forgive some things. Child abuse is one. I mean, that is just, it's hard to even think about that. And she said that she was abused from the age of 4 months to 4 years. She was sexually abused. She said that it almost killed her. That's a pretty serious thing. She tells, again, it came out very lighthearted and funny. She got so that was always a story that when she would tell it, people would go, oh, that is so sad. Well, she told it, I mean, this is years later. She's an adult and everything. And years later, there was a teacher that said, honey, we have heard that story. That's so sad. She said, well, maybe you need to look at it different. Maybe you need to reframe. And the teacher paused. Actually, I think it was a male. Paused and kind of thought for a moment. And then he said, what if we looked at it this way? You say often that you are a woman of strength. And she does. She starts out her talks. She starts out this book. I am a woman of strength. He says, you say you are a woman of strength. What if that experience that you had so early in life and was so difficult, what if that became a foundation of your strength? What if you learned in that you had to be strong, that you were a survivor, that you would make it, that you could make it? Perhaps that is the underpinnings of everything that you've become. Maybe that experience, as horrible as it was, gave you the strength and made you the woman that you are today. And so she said it changed her whole outlook. It changed her life because then she began to reframe those things that she had felt victimized about. Oh, poor me. And I think many of us at times can get to that place of, this is just so sad. Yes, probably it is or was, but maybe there's a way of reframing it. So forgiving, we want to forgive. We want to be that clear vessel. Anybody in here like to floss? You do? Okay, if you like to floss. Now, do you like to floss or do you like the way you feel when you have flossed? Okay. I don't know anybody that really likes the act of flossing. Maybe, do you like you do? Okay. Okay, I know one person that... I floss because I want good results when I go to the dentist. I want that dentist to say, okay, that's really helped. You don't have nearly as much plaque as you used to. I like the way it feels once I've done it. You know, my mouth feels cleaner and, you know, all that stuff. But if I had, you know, this many things that I could choose to do in a day, flossing wouldn't be one of them. It just would not be. Forgiveness is like that. Forgiveness is not something that is fun to do, pleasant to do even. When we feel someone has hurt us or wronged us in some way, don't we feel some power, you know, in our anger or justified in our sadness, our tears? You know, it's sometimes it's kind of comfortable to stay in that space. But like the dentist, it may take a little while to get to it, but forgiveness does the same kind of thing. It is not a fun thing to do. Jesus told us that we are to do this 70 times 7. So, okay, we do it. And then the good thing is then that we feel light. We feel lighter when we forgive, especially on a regular basis. So that's why we do it. It's not necessarily fun, but it is a good thing. So she talks about a daily practice. If we're going to do this forgiveness, I mean, you probably will see and feel results no matter how much you do, because if you start forgiving, then it does kind of begin to open things up. But she recommends 5 daily practices, techniques, she calls them, that will help us in our quest to be prosperous, to be able to forgive. So the first one is writing, speaking, and listening to forgiveness affirmations. Writing, speaking, and listening to forgiveness affirmations. I'm going to just give you a couple of examples of what forgiveness affirmations are. I forgive myself completely for every mistake I have ever made. I forgive others, knowing that we all did the best we could at the time. I let go of guilt, blame, shame, judgment, and hurt. I am free from condemnation. Just examples of forgiveness affirmations. They're important. So if you can say them, create your own. Say them, write them down, record them, listen to them. That it on a daily basis, it's an amazing process. Number 2, she suggests that we, before we go to sleep, that we ask ourselves, is there anybody, the way she phrases it, and I really like it, is there anybody that we have put out of our heart today? So that might be anyone we snubbed, anyone we were curt with, anyone we insulted, anyone we were rude to, anyone that just didn't go into our heart today. We didn't treat with love. Anyone we didn't treat with love might be another way to say it. And if so, forgive ourselves for the judgment. So do this nightly check to see, what have I done today that I might want to forgive myself for? The third technique. She says she does, it's a forgiveness inventory, a life inventory. So she says she, on a yearly basis, sometimes more often, she will do this inventory. And she sets aside a time and a place, an environment where she can do this. So she makes sure that she's not going to be interrupted. She's got as much time as she needs. And she begins to review her life. And she goes back as far as she can remember. Thinks about childhood, elementary school. Thinks about the friends, remembering situations that came up. And then when there are those events, those situations that happened where we might have not acted in the best way, then that's something that we can forgive ourselves for, perhaps. And she says, use affirmations for the other person. So if it's someone who, if you run across something, divorce is good for this. If you've been divorced and you go back over that, sometimes you'll remember situations or something that happened, and you might remember a conversation that upset you, angered you. It's a good time to do affirmations for that other person. I bless you. I wish you a happy, long and happy life. I bless you. I hope that you have plenty of love. All of those kinds of things. And you forgive yourself for any feelings, negative feelings that you harbored toward that person and showed in some way. So, forgiveness inventory is number 3. Number 4, forgive yourself. Sometimes it's easier, I think, to think about forgiving another person. Well, this person did this to me. This person said that. do we very often look at ourselves? There's a practice that I have done in, a few times in my life that is just really powerful, very effective, and it's called a forgiveness letter to God. Two parts to it. So the first part is, I forgive so-and-so for such-and-such. And you write down all that you can about, I felt this way, I felt that way, and you know, I forgive that. And then the second part is, I forgive myself in that same situation for, and you list those out. And it is extremely powerful. I have experienced things that I hadn't even looked at. You know, that I knew what the situation was, and I had thought about it from the perspective of that person who had done something, but I had really not looked at my own part in what had happened. So it's a very powerful experience. So forgive yourself. And the last one that she says is, if you just can't forgive, ask for help. And that could be God or Jesus or Kuan Yin or Muhammad or Buddha or just some spiritual being that you can imagine in your mind sitting with, talking with, some being that would be loving and supportive no matter what. And then imagine yourself telling that person, say it's Jesus, telling Jesus about this thing that you can't forgive, and then inviting the person that you can't forgive into that triad. And what you can't forgive, Jesus can. And so the visualization of having the three of you speaking to that person is very powerful also. So ask for help, spiritual help from a higher being when you just can't forgive. Forgiveness is so, so very important. The lack of forgiveness blocks us from our good, any of that. Forgiveness and judging, forgiveness and not judging. Not judging is forgiveness is like it after it's already done. But if we can begin to keep ourselves from judging in the first place, then we may not have as much work to do on the forgiveness side. So we're working toward forgiving and not judging. And that keeps us clear and ready to receive. So when we're tithing, we have goals, we're forgiving, we're clear, and then we are ready to receive. Let's affirm that together. We are ready to receive. As a ministry, we are ready to receive. And so it is. As we do each week, let's take a few moments now to connect. Connect with that higher power. Connect with that divinity, that presence. So I invite you to become comfortable in your seat. Take a deep breath and release. Feel your shoulders dropping. Another deep breath in and out. Each deep, slow breath we take allows our bodies to completely relax. As we continue to breathe in this fashion, we can feel ourselves relaxing more and more into our seats, letting go, just breathing. We keep our focus on the breath coming in and going out. In these busy days that we all have, sometimes the quiet time gets pushed away. And yet it is in these quiet times, these times of silence, these times of breathing, these times of connection, that we are renewed. It is in these quiet times that we can let go of all of the busy chatter that happens in our minds constantly. Because we're busy focusing on the breath. We are simply breathing. And when that happens, we can begin to feel a deep and wonderful sense of peace. Peace that has nothing to do with any outer experiences, outer events. Peace that comes from within. We breathe. We know that we are safe. In this moment, all is well. We are beloved creations of the Most High. There is nothing that we can do or say that will ever change that. We are loved always. We let that love, that realization, permeate every cell. We are love in expression. This amazing love, Charles Fillmore calls it the great harmonizer. This amazing love does harmonize. It harmonizes the cells in our bodies, allowing for healing to happen. It harmonizes our human condition, our human situations and events, lives, so that we become that peaceful presence in the midst of chaos. We become that love in the world. It is the great harmonizer in the world, because as we as love are expanding and including our neighbors, ourselves, our God in our love, that energy builds, creates the fields of joy that Brian just sang about. We create such a field of love that it begins to be a tangible process that happens, that moves and soothes and heals and changes. That love helps us to release anything and everything that is not like itself in us, in our minds, in our hearts. And so it makes it much easier to let go of old grievances, old hurts. Those things fall away from us like watershed, rolling off of us. And what is left is that clear vessel, that clear channel for pure love to flow in and through and as. And so as we also do each week, we spend a few moments in silence. And as we do so today, let us experience that clear channel of love that we are in the silence. as we experience this love that flows in us and through us, we are creating kind of like a bubble of light, bubble of love that moves with us as we move through the world. We are grateful. Grateful for this connection, grateful for our oneness with God, with our Creator, with each other. God is life. We are life. We are one. And so it is with deep love and deep gratitude that we join together now in the prayer that our Master Teacher taught us, the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not in temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Amen.